Oh, Phil, these past 2 weeks were a gauntlet, but I made it through and I really left it all on the field. Like, I gave the kids everything I had to give, and there were times when I lost my patience, but not for lack of trying to not lose my patience. And I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I gave up on the trying not to lose my patience part a while ago.
So it's been so difficult, so difficult. And then on top of that, I put out this final episode of my podcast, the final
Yep.
scripted episode. I'm continuing on with the educational content, but I put out the final scripted episode. So, yeah, I feel like things will be better now, but I'm coming off one of the hardest couple of weeks of my life for
Yeah.
sure. Ah, but I'm so happy to be here and to be talking about this subject because I'm excited and I was thinking about it and I was like, wow, I have maybe more to say than I even thought.
I am sure you do. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week, you know what? No Berenstain Bear books. No Berenstain Bear books. Back into the corner, you guys go. I don't want to look at you this week. I was actually contacted by a fan of the show, a good fan, a good friend, who said, "Phil, you know what? In the last episode, you sounded really down on what you're doing on the
Oh.
show, on the Berenstain Bears." And he's like, "It sounds like you needed a little rejuvenation, just charge yourself up." And I was like, "I think you're right." And I got to thinking about one of my past episodes, my recent episodes, where I discussed mostly the Peanuts characters on the show and the way those sort of were a founding part of my childhood. And I got to thinking about the guests I've had and the different aspects and venues of popular culture that I've explored not only on my show but in my life, and how much joy it's brought me. And I thought, let me have on some guests, not just to talk about Berenstain Bears, but to simply talk about those things in their lives that not only give them joy but have given them joy throughout their development, from childhood to adulthood and through adulthood. And in fact, things that they enjoy so much that they have used it as a springboard for their own creativity. Because that's kind of what I've done with the Berenstain Bears. It's kind of what I've done throughout other podcasts I've had, including a Click It Cast, the Beverly Cleary podcast. So I got to looking down lists of friends and started taking some notes, and I was like, hey, I know somebody who has a very specific pop cultural touchstone in their life, who's been on this show and has used that pop cultural touchstone to a great creative triumph just recently. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back onto the show more than frequent guest who has a podcast on which she is co-producer, writer, and performer. It is called Little Women, a modern audio drama. Please welcome back onto the show, Shannon Camp. Hello, Shannon.
Hi, Phil. Thank you for that amazing introduction. I love that you said that I'm more than a frequent guest. That gives me the idea that I'm like the Phantom of the Opera of Deep in Bear Country. Like, even when I'm not audibly on an episode, I'm hovering just behind you, breathing on your neck, whispering my opinions in your ear.
I was gonna say, every night I go to a mirror and you tell me what to like talk about on the next show,
and you're like, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, the angel of podcasting. That is literally what I would love to have, though, by the way, like a mystery person who's telling me
That would be very comforting. People have been asking me since scripted episodes of Little Women, a modern audio drama, just wrapped, what I'm going to do next. And what I've been telling everyone is, I want to do something where I'm not the boss. I'm tired of being the boss. I don't want to be in charge. I want to be a cog in the machine. Let me be a part of someone else's project. That would honestly delight me, because I had a year of being, you know, basically co-producer and writer and whatnot, a little bit of everything
Yep.
of this you know, fiction podcast production. And it was an amazing experience, truly empowering. And now I truly need a break.
If you were a real masochist, you could adapt Little Men and have to deal with like 15 prepubescent boys doing the characters.
Yeah, I've already made jokes about that. Someone asked me if I was going to do a sequel, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do Little Men and cast a bunch of dudes, because everyone who knows me knows that a huge part of the reason I did this project is because I've worked in live theater previously, and I dealt with a lot of, let's call it, patriarchal nonsense during those jobs. So,
In the theater?
In the theater? In the liberal theater? They'd never do a thing wrong in the theater.
In an art form that used to completely keep women out of the building?
And still all but literally does.
Right. Right. Used to, quote unquote.
I mean, just as an example, and obviously this is one of the more extreme things that happened, but I was assistant directing a production, and it was an all-male cast. And I was leading a rehearsal because the director was out of town, and one of the cast members spat on me after I gave him a note.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
So it was very important to me with this podcast. And obviously, I had amazing people like Phil and his Click-A-Cast co-host, John McCoy, and lots of other friends who are men who were involved and who were amazingly supportive. But it was really exciting to me to create this platform that made space for a lot of young women from different backgrounds to have their voices heard. From my editor, Bex Carlos, who was a huge part in shaping this show, to Elise Torres, who played Meg, and Camille Michelotti, who played Beth, and Kylie Fong, who played Amy, and on. We just had like a really interesting mix of people coming from the theater and podcasting and just kind of all different worlds. And I tried to be as fair to everyone as I could be. I know I'm sure I made little mistakes along the way, because it was my first time producing anything, let alone a project of this scale. But overall, I think it was a positive experience for everyone, and I made some friends, and yeah, I'm feeling really good right now, basking in the aftermath.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do my part. I don't get to do a whole lot of acting these days, so I was honored to be approached, and I was honored to help participate.
Oh, well, it was so much fun having you involved. Since this project was so much composed of volunteers, I did pay like my editor and other artists who did really meticulous, laborious work for me. But because most of my actors were friends who were volunteering, it was really wonderful to have all these people from different parts of my life. I had someone who I went to my university theater program with. I had someone I went to high school with who was in my little brother's grade. So I kind of had people from all over and all over the world, thanks to our friend Kwame Phillips, who played Professor Bear. So it was such a cool process. And I am still interested in podcasting and in audio drama. But let's just say I never expected to be putting out my final two episodes in the midst of a global pandemic. And that did add a somewhat additional layer of stress to the whole process.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit, because one of the things I really want to talk about when I talk about these subjects is kind of how this particular bit of popular culture came into your life and what it meant to you as a child.
Sure. I really had to think about this, because it's one of those things that has been so omnipresent in my life for so many years that I had to really think and remember when I first encountered it. Mm-hmm. It was definitely checked out from my elementary school library. I think I was 8 years old and in the second grade. And I remember the original novel at that time being a little bit of a difficult read for me in terms of like getting through the prose. I remember having a bookmark underneath the line I was reading and slowly sliding it down the page as I completed each line to like keep myself focused. But I think that goes to show how interested I was in the story that I pushed myself and kept reading and did finish it. And I was a pretty strong reader for my age. And I remember around first and second grade, I would sometimes check out books and kids would accuse me of just pretending to read them because I couldn't actually be reading anything that size. Uh-huh. And my school's copy of Little Women was really old, like maybe from the 1940s or 50s. Now that I think about it, and I think about the illustration style, it was falling apart in my hands. I had to hold it very carefully. And my elementary school had this program where on your birthday, your parents would donate a book to the school library. And it would have like a little sticker inside saying, this was Shannon Camp's birthday book, 1999. And you would get the honor of being the first person to check it out. So when I was in fifth grade, my parents replaced the falling apart copy, which had been checked out and had been in our home many times, with a beautiful new copy that I hope is still in my elementary school library. And as to why the story so immediately resonated with me, I will admit that I was already a kid who was very into like the idea of doing old-fashioned chores. Like, oh, I would have killed to churn some butter or like darn a sock, because I grew up even from a very, very young age with like the American Girl books, and the Little House on the Prairie series was read aloud to me. So I had this very romantic idea of like being a girl who's living a hard life in olden times and just surviving despite it all. I think that was probably the first thing that appealed to me about it as an 8-year-old. But I also immediately found reasons, whether consciously or subconsciously, to relate to each of the March sisters. I don't think it was like Jo specifically grabbed my attention, even though later on she would, because I was one of the oldest girls in my class to still be playing with dolls, which is a very Beth thing. I was one of the oldest of my set of 12 cousins that all lived very close to each other. So I related to Meg, feeling like she had to be this responsible older sister figure. And I was the oldest sibling. I have one younger brother. I was a huge drama queen, very emotional. So that's pure Joe and Amy. And I related to them, too. And so I think I just really liked all the girls, not just Joe, and connected with them right away, really latched on to them. They might be the first fictional characters I can remember really feeling that way about. Like, I took all my dolls and made them the other characters from Little Women and would pretend to be Marmee and assign each of my American girls. Like, oh, well, Felicity is obviously the Joe. You know Felicity. It was really like that. But
yeah.
I was really thinking, because I read so many books. I was such an avid reader, and I read so many famous franchises and classic novels. Like, what is it about Little Women that really stuck with me? And now that I think back on it from the perspective of being an adult, I was such a lonely kid who felt so unsafe at school. I really didn't fit in with the other kids, which I honestly understand because, as I said, I was extremely emotional, very prone to tears, very talkative and opinionated, which I know your listeners are like, what? Her? I'm shocked. But I understand why I didn't totally jive with the other kids. I also had all these very niche interests. Like I said, I was already really interested in these historical topics, and my parents pretty much shut off the valve on most pop culture stuff. Like, I remember being mocked for not knowing who Britney Spears was because I just wasn't allowed to watch anything remotely grown up. Everything I watched was so geared towards children, maybe even children younger than myself, because I had a younger brother. So I really felt like a square peg. I just did not fit in with the other kids at school. And I often, especially, I think a lot of girls have this experience, but would get ganged up on by other girls. And I did have some good friends, but you know how elementary school friendships are. Things can ebb and flow.
Oh, definitely.
And I think the idea of having sisters, having these girls your same age who are going through the same experiences as you, that are always in your corner no matter what, even if you, oh my gosh, my voice is breaking talking about this. Even if you have fights or falling outs, they're still there for you. I think that was probably what really, really hooked me on the series. Not what I had in common with the characters, but what I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the strengths of this book, too, is that of the four main characters, none of them are presented as anything other than it's completely perfect for them to be who they are.
Yeah, and home is a very safe place in Little Women. They have very supportive parents, even if Captain March isn't around a lot. And that was true for me. I had very supportive parents, and home did feel like a safe place. I had a lot of anxiety about going to school, and I faked sick a lot, and I was sick a lot. We didn't know it at the time, but I've since been diagnosed with, like, three different co-occurring gastro issues. So I would, like, get nervous and be so scared about going to school that I would be getting sick, like vomiting and stuff. And so, yeah, it definitely, the idea of like home being this safe space where all the fun adventures happen, I think that really resonated with me too. So I think it was just kind of the perfect storm of factors. It was a great game to play with the dolls, gave the dolls plenty of hardship to go through, plenty of cold cloths to lay on each other's foreheads. It was, a great game for American Girl dolls. And that combined with my interest in these historical topics that Little Women kind of dances around and the idea of having this female kinship, it got me totally hooked.
Well, I've gotten to know your interest in Little Women through just our online interactions. Like, before your Little Women audio drama was ever mentioned, like, if someone said Little Women, I'd be like, oh, Shannon Camp. Like, it was transparent. And although, like, I now associate Little Women with various people in my life, because once you mention it, people start piping up and talking about it. You remain like kind of the go-to person.
Oh, that's very kind. I am very careful in all my podcasts. I talked about this a little bit on Sophomore Lit with John McCoy. I don't want to make people feel like they're shut out of the fandom because they don't know as much as me. I don't want to be one of those fans who acts like they own the story.
Oh yeah, I was going to say, when you become known in that way online, people tend to want their expert, and then they kind of audiences will shut everybody else out once they've identified someone who knows a lot about something. And I think one of the things I've always appreciated about you is you foster conversation about it instead of just being a mouthpiece for the story.
Oh, that's I'm really very touched, and I do appreciate it. I always clarify that, you know, I'm not someone who has ever studied this at an academic level. I'm just like anyone else who's a fan who loves learning more about a topic. And I think your podcast is going to prove that we all have a topic like that in our lives that we're sort of independent mini experts on. But I guess what I'd noticed online since I was in college and I got more interested in, like, let's call it costume drama fandom, or you could call it period piece fandom. I noticed that a lot of circles, kind of not to call anyone out, but especially the Janeites, the Jane Austen fans, could be really exclusionary. Like, if you don't know every single detail of every single Austen book and you don't have this specific opinion on it, you're shut out. But also, there was a vein of strong anti-feminist and anti-women and sometimes internalized misogyny running through some of these conversations. You know, for example, the way fans will pillory Lydia Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, who's actually a 14-year-old girl who gets taken advantage of by an older man who basically victimizes her, in my opinion. And the way we pit female characters against each other, how you have to like Joe or Amy, or and Meg is boring and Beth is too good. You can't appreciate each character for what they are. You have to have a favorite and everyone else is garbage. I just, the way online conversations can kind of make us see things with so much less nuance was not the way I wanted to discuss these things that I just love so much, because I do love period pieces and costume dramas, and I want to see them expand and become more interested in what women and other marginalized groups of people were going through in the time periods they portray. So yeah, I wanted to put Louisa May Alcott's really amazingly progressive for the time beliefs out there, because as soon as the trailer for Greta Gerwig's Little Women came out, I saw a lot of really bizarre comments that are like, this scene isn't even in the book, about scenes that definitely were in the book. But also the idea that she was like grafting these feminist ideas onto a story that's about traditional family values, which is just not true.
Right.
But I wanted to still, again, not make it be like, well, I'm right and you're wrong. So some people, if anyone who's listening to this already likes my podcast on Facebook, they might have seen, because of the way Facebook algorithms work, that I've purchased some advertisements on Facebook for the podcast. And because those advertisements are shown to everyone, not just my friends and fans of the show, I get comments on them.
Yes, you do.
Comments
yes,
you from do. Strangers. And the majority of those comments from strangers are like, how could you desecrate this classic by setting it in the modern era? And people have said some really nasty things. And it would be easy for me to try to do some sort of like viral clapback where I cite incredibly specific facts about Louisa May Alcott's life, like these women care. They don't. But what I've done instead is gone into these conversations and replied to the comments with an "I'm so glad that we're both so passionate about Little Women, and we both have different ways of expressing our love for it. If this version isn't for you, I totally understand, and have a good day." Because I really do feel that way. Like, there are so many different versions of all these classic stories. I don't love all of them, so I definitely don't expect anyone else to. But I try to leave the door open for civil conversation.
Well, I think you do a great job at it, and I've always appreciated that approach of acknowledging a person's passion and saying, like, we have this common thing, like, we're both very passionate about this. If you want to have an adult conversation about it, I'm more than open to that.
Well, also, some of this comes from the Marmy in my life, my mother, who grew up in Ireland, going to a lot of Irish Catholic schools, at least for some of her life, and taught me an invaluable piece of advice that I'll pass on to all your listeners, which is that if you're very kind and respectful to someone who's being crappy to you, they will collapse in on themselves in shame. You know, if you take the high road and are just like, person is being rude to me, I'm going to treat you graciously and with respect, you're not adding fuel to their fire. And I found that 99% of the time when I keep my calm, the person who is freaking out or being rude or has something nasty to say will back down because they realize that it's obvious that they're in the wrong.
You had mentioned a little ways back, like, how Little Women goes beyond, like, the novel in front of you, or if you're going to be pedantic about it, the novels in front of you.
Yeah. Let's not forget about Good Wives, everyone's favorite title. I think I've mentioned this on my podcast before. In England, just Little Women without Good Wives is still very popular.
I did see that. I was confused for a while, and then I was like, oh, to some people, Little Women does just mean Little Women.
It's like turning off the Sound of Music before the Nazis arrive, which I know have known certain families with children to do. I think the idea is that you read them Little Women when they're young and they don't have to deal with the sadness of Beth's passing. I really think that's why people do it.
It's the first act of Into the Woods. It's you know that times are still going to be tough, but hey, everything's pretty good. And then you watch the second act of Into the Woods. But what I was going to ask is, you know, like with Berenstain Bears, I can read the books and I can read the autobiography of the authors and I can get a little context for how these stories came about. I can read the works they did before they did the Berenstain Bears and see how the pieces all fit together. But for Little Women, there is a wealth of information out there that enhances one's enjoyment of of this book, and a sort of like takes it's that meme of like the mind expanding. Like the first one would be like reads Little Women, and the second's like reads, you know, like biographies on Louisa May Alcott. The third can be like visits like the homestead. Like it just,
oh yeah,
sort of this cosmic understanding, and you're like, oh my goodness, this all makes so much more sense. So from as a person who is well educated about Little Women, like how does one begin exploring beyond the text of the novel?
It actually all goes back to when I was 8. You know, I was, like I mentioned, home was a really safe space for me, and I was lucky to have parents who encouraged reading and encouraged me following my interests, no matter what those were. So when they saw how much I loved Little Women, they got the 1994 movie for me on VHS, an absolute banger. And then from then on, we watched that every Christmas. But my mother sought out and found I don't know what you would call it. It wasn't really a biography. It was a historical fiction novel based on facts about young Louisa May Alcott's life. It basically was a novel expressing from her point of view the family's time at the Fruitlands commune, which is definitely one of the most interesting points of their family life. For those who don't know, it's when the family tried to start a utopian commune. So I was totally hooked by that story, as much as Little Women. And I may have read some sort of illustrated biography of Louisa May Alcott for children. I don't remember ever not knowing that Little Women was so semi-autobiographical. I think it must have been within months of me reading the book, my parents gave me those other books.
Yeah.
And then, oh, this is so fun. See, this is what's nice to remember. So many people from different parts of my life have helped foster this passion. When I spent my first Christmas with my significant other's family in Denver, his parents gave me the annotated Little Women, which is an yes. absolute beast. It is huge.
It's amazing. Like,
it's amazing. It's so well done. It has great pictures of artifacts from the Alcott's life. It's really great. And so I spent the rest of that Christmas break just like laying around kind of leisurely flipping through it. And I think that was probably when the germ of the idea for the podcast planted itself somewhere deep in my subconscious. Not really fully realized, but I was like, oh, there's so much here. This is such a wealth of interesting material. And for good or for ill, you know, I think a lot of times we want to know about the lives of female authors because traditionally it's been like, what in her life inspired this? Who was the Mr. Rochester in Charlotte Bronte's life? And who was the Heathcliff in da 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 da? To the point that we don't even view their works as like as much like art as we should. But that's a whole other right. podcast episode for another day. But as a child, I definitely was interested in writing and reading and wanted to know more about the women, including Beverly Cleary, who were writing my favorite books. They were heroes of mine. So I think I did know at least a little bit about any author I was that passionate about the stories of, because it's just so interesting. And some of them have led just such fascinating lives. And I would always get like feminist kids books as presents from aunts and uncles, like, you know, like, oh, great women throughout history. It's a picture book and every two pages has a different little blurb on a different great woman. And a lot of them would be authors because, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Would you say that the annotated Little Women is a good place to start if someone was looking to like sort of expand their Little Women like knowledge and education?
Sure. I mean, start with my podcast, baby. Right. But no, I'm just joking. If you're a Little Women fan who wants to know more, I thought you were going to ask me as a first reading, and I would never
want to do
it as a first reading. It's like physically something you grapple with. I think I read it laying on my belly on the floor. But yeah, it's really fun. You don't have to like commit to reading an entire chapter. You can read some of the essays from the beginning, or you can flip around and find different sections that interest you. I'm actually going to recommend another book slightly above the annotated Little Women, though, and that is Meg, Jo, Beth, Amy by Anne Boyd Ryu. It just came out this year to celebrate, or I guess last year, to celebrate the 150th publication anniversary. it is a really fun, fast-paced read that's not that thick, that will take you through the whole creation of Little Women, the cultural surroundings of its release, and then how it's had an afterlife since Louisa May Alcott's time. It's really great. It boils everything down, but still leaves you with a lot of really fun facts and ideas. Like that thing I told you about British people still reading just the first half of the book is something I learned from that text. So if you're
now, this is not to be confused with Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy.
Yes. So the graphic novel has the and the nonfiction book does not have an and. That's all I can tell you. I'm so sorry. But the graphic novel is also amazing.
The graphic novel is also amazing, but yeah, I didn't want people to be like, wait a minute.
No, but I would also highly recommend everyone check out the graphic novel, which I think is probably, in fiction and nonfiction, the best representation of the inherent queerness of Louisa May Alcott's work, especially her work in Little Women. In the graphic novel, Jo is actually queer, and so is another character. I won't spoil who, because it's kind of a fun discovery. And I think those themes are present in the original text, and I don't know that any other version has explored them as fully as the graphic novel. So I do always recommend the graphic novel.
Yeah, the graphic novel is that one's a favorite of Mitzi.
I'm sure.
She's read that one many times as someone who loves a good graphic novel about people above her age going through like people above her age kind of experiences. Sort of using the graphic novel as a springboard to my next point, which is modernizations of Little Women aren't unheard of, obviously. People have reframed this story for modern times before. So what was it about now that made you decide to jump in and use that as a way of retelling the story?
Oh, there are so many good reasons. I'm really glad you asked. For one, it was sort of what I talked about before with the idea that these, I don't want to say conservative values, but let's say conservative values were being grafted onto the story in an unnatural way. And people who maybe were new to the story, had never read it before, might find that kind of unappealing and forbidding. I know the graphic novel is very, very left of center, and I love that. But the most recent modernization, that movie adaptation, I haven't seen it, so I don't want to dunk on it too hard.
Oh,
but
right.
I have not heard good things. And it was made
Leah Thompson?
Yeah. And it was made by a production company that's known for making like some very conservative Christian movies that are pretty xenophobic. So I was like, ooh, I don't like that. And I had also just been really interested in the medium of audio drama for a long time. And I was sort of trying to brainstorm different ideas. I knew that I wanted to have a lot of roles for young women. And ideally, it would be something where, like, it could be different backgrounds and stuff. And I was thinking about my initial idea was like a Nancy Drew style mystery where the mystery unfolds week after week. But Nancy is not in the public domain, my friends. Extremely not in the public domain. And while I was thinking about that, the CW announced that they were doing their Nancy Drew show. So I was like, well, okay, that idea just isn't going to work out. It's just, I could do a different girl detective, but I'm just not feeling it. And I was literally just driving one day, driving home from work, and the idea of doing Little Women the way I ended up doing it basically popped into my head. I know that sounds sort of like, oh, I just was hit by a bolt of inspiration, but it was more like all these coexisting ideas were sort of swirling around together in my noggin until something finally happened. I'd always wanted to be in Little Women, especially to be Jo, who was a character I related to more and more as I got older and sort of had experiences in my life that I felt like really lined up with experiences that Jo specifically has. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned, in working in the theater, sometimes feeling like being a woman artist trying to get your work produced by men or a male-centric industry is very difficult. So, yeah, I really connected with Joe, and I was like, oh, it's just a dream role. It had been something where I had, like, had multiple chances to audition for Little Women, but had never actually gotten into the room. Like, things had just fallen through for whatever reason, and everything kind of perfectly coalesced. I was like, oh, this is a story that wouldn't require a lot of special effects or like crazy suspension of disbelief. You know, at no point do aliens land in Concord. Right. And I kind of put feelers out. I had the idea that I wanted to do something for young people because my day job is working as a nanny. And I've also written like 5 or 6 children's plays that have been produced in my hometown. So I had a lot of experience writing for children. Mm-hmm. And it really was just like, oh, this is perfect. And then the year I premiered it, like I said, is the 150th anniversary of the book's publication.
Yeah.
The movie was coming out, and I knew that the movie would create new fans of the story, and it would also create free publicity for me when people search Little Women on iTunes. Right. And my podcast pops up. Like, John, our friend, was so funny on Sophomore Lit. He was like, I know you didn't just decide to do Little Women because the movie was coming out. And I was like, oh, no, that is why I did it. Right. Like, how dare you underestimate my need for free publicity?
To be fair, there is always a Little Women movie coming out.
That's true. But let's just say I was especially excited about the Greta Gerwig one because I had high hopes. And then my high hopes were more than met. They were exceeded. They were blown all the way out of the water. So, yeah, it just was one of those things where the dominoes lined up, and then even though there were hiccups along the way, things more or less fell into place. I think in part because, like I said, I had a cast and crew of a mix of either friends who were volunteering or people I was paying, and I was trying to treat everyone with the same level of respect and kindness, which I hope is a high level. And on top of that, I knew that I wanted to tell the story and really make it about service to your community, not just the insular life of a family. I sort of turned my character's journey into one where she's very self-centered. And then by the end of the story, she's realized that she's making herself miserable by only trying to make her own life better and not trying to help other people's lives outside of her little family bubble. So that was the angle that I like very decidedly took. I decided really early on that Professor Bear would be black and that Joe would be kind of a clueless white feminist who acts as if they're coming from the same background and has to learn that, no, that's not true. I don't know. It just like I had all these ideas about the story and Louise May Alcott's progressive values to begin with. Everything, it was so easy to modernize. It's already such a modern story in so many ways.
Well, I have one final question for you.
Ooh.
What are your favorite adaptations of Little Women?
Well, I kind of already spoiled it because I said I do really love the Greta Gerwig movie, and I do really love it. I think it's probably the most complete adaptation in that almost every scene is a scene that's truly in the book, and because of the non-chronological timeline, they cover an incredible amount of the text. There are scenes from the book in that movie that have never appeared in any other movie version, and there are tiny details that are amazing in their accuracy to the novel. Now, I don't think that strict adherence to the story is what makes an adaptation good. I'm not one of those people who's like, it needs to be slavishly accurate. That's been one of my problems with the period piece fandom. So I really liked the spin on the ending. I don't want to give too much away. I definitely don't think it was all like an Inception-style fantasy. I will say that. And those who know, know what I mean. Because Professor Bear is in the final birthday party scene, ergo, he's real. But anyway, I will recommend a few other versions. I talked about the graphic novel, which I think is probably the best way to get a very young fan into the show. I mean, into the book, movie, whatever you want to call it, or get them into my podcast. Again, please listen to my podcast. It's intentionally family friendly. But there's a novel I have mentioned quite a few times called March by Geraldine Brooks. Mm. And it is Captain March's experiences while he's away working as a Union chaplain. And it's a very slim read, very thin, short book, but a very heavy one, obviously, because there's battlefield violence and there's violence against enslaved people. It's definitely for adults only. But it is a very nuanced and beautiful take on his experience and him grappling with his own prejudices and privileges and how he even has mixed feelings about coming back home. Because as Amy runs into his arms, he thinks of a little enslaved girl that he knew that he was unable to save. And it's really just an arresting book. It stuck with me since I read it in high school, and I only read it a couple of times. But yeah, it's really, I really recommend it. It's really great. And then I will recommend one other fun thing. I will try to find the link so that maybe Phil can put it in the show notes. My boyfriend, Zach, who also plays Lori on the podcast, showed me a really cool YouTube video that's about 15 minutes long that compares all four movie versions that we have footage of, because some versions are so old we don't even have access to footage of them.
Yeah.
But it does a split screen between the four versions and will show you a scene from the book and how the dialogue is exactly the same, but what the four different sets of actors and directors did with the text. And it is such a fascinating introduction to the idea of adaptation. So I would love to dig that up. I wish I remembered the YouTuber it's by so I could say their name on the air, but I will try to find that and send a link to Phil, because honestly, even if you're not a Little Women fan, if you're someone who's interested in movie making or just how stories are constructed, I think you'll find it fascinating.
Yeah, I've always found it very satisfying to watch different versions of this story because the book is so complex and so rich in detail. Every adapter has their own, like, this is what the story is about. This is what the story is about. And so you get the same story, but from wildly different perspectives. And I think that's a testament to like how much is in this story.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I will say, just to wrap this section up, I still like the 1994 version very much. It's not as complete as the Greta Gerwig version. And I don't love how much it centers the romantic relationships, but it's extremely beautiful. It's a very Christmassy movie. So if you're looking for the most Christmassy version of the story, that is definitely it.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was really such a treat. And, you know, I've been a little bit melancholy and wistful that my time as Joe just came to an end. So this really helped me process it in a beautiful way.
That's great.
And I'm really excited to hear what other people are passionate about and how they've made art out of their passions. I think this is such a great idea for your podcast.
Well, let us know where we can find you.
Well, since I've talked your ear off about Little Women, I'll start with the link to that. You can find us on any platform where you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening to Deep in Bear Country right now. But of course, the easiest way is just to go to littlewomenpodcast.com. littlewomenpodcast.com.
You just got littlewomenpodcast.com? Like, that was available?
I told people I would not do the project unless littlewomenpodcast.com was available, and it was. Like, I was standing next to my computer, and when Squarespace checked it and said it was available, I like did a Mario jump into the air with one fist straight up. And you can find out more about me and my other work and my other podcast and theater stuff at shannon-camp.com, spelled like my last name, because weirdly, shannoncamp.com was taken. Get this. There's a Shannon Camp who's like a doctor of gender studies, and she's written papers about sexism in video games and fantasy stories. So,
oh my goodness.
Fellow Shannon, if you're listening, I love your work. You're an inspiration to me, honestly.
You guys should collaborate, do a show called like Camp Out.
I've never reached out to her in any way, but whenever I Google her, whenever I Google myself, what am I saying? Whenever I Google myself and she pops up alongside me, I'm like, gosh darn it, you make me feel cool.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much once again for being on my show.
Oh, I'm always happy to be deep in bear country. I was joking with the friends I was having virtual brunch with before this that I was mad we weren't talking about Berenstain Bears because I stan Sister Bear.
Oh, we will definitely have you back on to talk about more bears. There's hundreds more books in the future, so...
I really look forward to it. And thank you so much for doing this. Those other episodes are going to be a much-needed burst of positivity in my day.
Awesome. And if you're looking for this show, you've already found it. But again, it's at BerensteinBearcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast. Find me on Facebook at Facebook/, I think, BerensteinBearcast is what it is. I do some stuff online every now and then. I try to keep up with myself. Otherwise, I have a Patreon.com/DeepInBearCountry if you want to support the show financially. And there's there's bonus episodes on there. I think that's it. Shannon, have a great rest of your day.
You too, Phil. Thanks for keeping everyone's spirits up.
I'm trying.
We're all trying.
Yeah, well, we sure are trying. And I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.